Guys, same old man. Game
Here's Johnny.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
So serious.
I am Iron Man.
This is a tasty burger.
Welcome to the In Session Film Podcast.
Welcome to this week's extra film segment for August 8th, 2019. I'm Ryan McQuaid.
And I'm Jay Ledbetter.
Thanks for coming back to the show, guys. For those of you not familiar with extra film, this is something we do every Friday, where we get together and we talk about the small films, the indies, or the classics that we normally don't have time for on the main show. And on this week's show, Jay, we will be discussing the latest film in the Fast and Furious franchise, Hobbs and Shaw. And in the back half of the episode, we will be reviewing the latest from indie director Lynn Shelton in Sword of Trust. Been a long week, a lot in my personal life, a lot of work, and it's been quite an exhausting day, let alone a week. But Jay, it's always great to be back here on Extra Film talking movies with you, my friend. How are you doing? How has your week been? Do you feel the exhaustion that I feel in life right now?
Absolutely, yeah. It's to quote Rihanna, work, 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 work. It's been a lot of work for me as well. Been a really crazy week, and it's going to only be as crazy or crazier next week. But it's always great to be here with you. And you mentioned that this is a show about the small films, the indies, or the classics. I'm thinking about Fast and Furious. It is neither a small film nor an indie. So does that mean it's an instant classic? Stay tuned to find out on In Session Film, Extra Film. It's look, you know, in the Fast and Furious franchise is right up my alley, so I'm really excited to get to talk about that one. And then Sword of Trust sort of has some quasi connection to me because my wife is from Birmingham. There aren't very many films set in the city of Birmingham, so that struck a certain chord with me. So a couple of really fun ones we have this week.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I mean, Jay, just hamming it up already, just get in and out of the way for all of our listeners. So it's gonna, you know, it's that kind of episode, Jay, so I will allow it. I mean, Fast and Furious, as we alluded
to last
week.
Do you think they're hamming it up in Hobbs and Shaw? I thought it was a really straightforward,
yes, it was a very
dramatic
much a,
piece.
Yeah, it was. I didn't get that.
Oh, okay, got it. We're on the same page.
But it, you know, this franchise has been known to just ham it up, especially as we mentioned last week. A lot of the later entries seem to be focusing more on
the
ridiculous.
Well, Ryan, you see, it's a film series about family.
Yeah,
I don't know
yeah,
if you know
right.
that or not. Yeah. You know, it's about family.
No, it's about family, fast cars, and Coronas. You know, that's you know, that's the theme of Fast and Furious. So it'll be interesting when we review Hobbs and Shaw if it meets up to those standards. But before we get into this week's episode, we do have to plug the main show coming up this weekend, episode 338.
Do we have to?
Yeah, we kind of should.
Okay.
I mean, it wouldn't be such a bad thing because they are talking about a film this weekend that I'm very much looking forward to hearing them talk about, which is Loose, the film starring Octavia Spencer, Naomi Watts, Tim Roth, and Calvin Harrison Jr. It's a film that I've already seen, and I quite like the film. I think there's a lot to say, and I'm looking forward to hearing the discussion on Loose. If you have it near you, I suggest you go and see it so you can get yourself ready for the main show this week. Top three right now, we don't have that, so to be announced. So you can follow us on social media to find out that later. But we do have a poll for this week, and it ties into Loose, Jay, with, of course, it's starring Academy Award winner Octavia Spencer. We are asking the question, what is your favorite Octavia Spencer performance? A lot of options there. She's had a filmography over the last couple of years that has just blossomed, including in Loose this year and in Ma. So, Jay, what is your favorite Octavia Spencer performance?
She is having a very big 2019, and the biggest shout-out for me personally in she graduated from my university, Auburn University, so big War Eagle to her. You can find plenty of clips of her online saying War Eagle, so for that and many other reasons, I will always adore her, but as far as my favorite performance of hers, oh, there's so many good ones. She definitely plays a type, but honestly, I think she keeps The Help from becoming way too saccharine and beyond hope as far as just how corny and cheesy and white savior-y it is. Mm-hmm. She is the reason to me that that film really works. And so that would have to be my pick because it is her performance in that movie, I think, that allows it to transcend up to a level of at least competency, or to a level that I would say that I recommend that film. So that would probably be my pick, although you can't go wrong with, she's really good in The Shape of Water, in sort of a thankless kind of role a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think she's so good in Hidden Figures. She's great. She's one of our best actresses, and she deserves more meaty roles. I still haven't seen Ma, and that is obviously, like, she gets the titular role. She really gets to chew everything up in that movie from what I've seen in the trailers, but I have not seen it yet. So my pick is The Help.
Yeah, no, all the three films that you mentioned are her biggest roles, because those are all Oscar-nominated roles for her. And then Hidden Figures, Shape of Water, and The Help, which she won her Academy Award for, and really kind of blossomed onto the stage, right? In terms of getting more roles.
As Woman in Elevator in Being John Malkovich.
Yes, that's very true. She has a lot of roles like that in her career, but then... I do
she
agree
does.
With
she
you.
Has a long career, but she it took her a while to really break through.
Yeah, I do agree with you, though, Jay. I think that The Help is her best performance, and I think it's my favorite performance from her. She really is doing a fantastic job of being kind of a comic relief in that film, but also being the thematic thread between not just the Jessica Chastain character and all the storyline going on with her, but also everything that's going on with Viola Davis in her storyline. I think that she is really good in that movie. And that is a movie, yes, Jay, that can get very sappy and like you said, white savory. But I think that it's a little bit more because of not only Viola Davis's performance in that film, which is really good, but also Octavia Sirk doing, you know, her career-defining role that won her that great award in 2011. It's only been 8 years, but she has, you know, done so many roles over that time period, small or big, like in Ma this year, where, yeah, she had a lot of fun. I wasn't a big fan of Ma. Actually, I did get to see Ma. I wasn't a big fan of it, but she is the best part of it. So that they're saying something for that, because she's just a great actress. But I do think her performance in Loose, while I'm still thinking about it, could be right up there with Minnie Jackson in The Help. It's a truly astonishing performance, and why I can see a lot of people trying to push her already for a fourth Oscar nomination, because she's quite good in Loose. But you know, I'm sure the guys will talk about her performance in Loose this week on episode 338. But Jay, we gotta go get in our car, and we gotta drive on down the road, because we gotta review
Vroom Vroom Baby.
We gotta review Hobbs and Shaw. We gotta review Sword of Trust. We gotta review the films on Extra Film. So without further ado, let's get into it.
And here we go.
I'm on the next level, yeah, I know you heard about it. You know I'm bad at bad it, and don't you ever doubt it. I'm incomparable, that's why they stare and go. Turn up the stereo, check it out, check it out, check it out. I'm on the next level, next, next, next level. On the next level, they all trying to catch up to my next level, next, next, next level.
You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast Extra Film segment. Jay, you want to tell me what in the fresh turkey hell we're dealing with here?
Well, you know, it is Thanksgiving, so obviously I had to get the fresh turkey in here. And you're right, it is a hell of a good one, because I've got it with some really special stuffing in here. It's got some delicious Cajun seasoning, and I think it's going to be a hell of a fine meal, if I do say so myself.
You want to tell me just what in the fresh turkey hell we're dealing with here?
Long story. It's a ghost. It's supposed to be dead. 8 years ago, I put a bullet through his brain.
Great. So being chased by the Terminator.
I don't think he's going to make it.
Well, I don't think you can see over the steering wheel.
Buckle up, fat boy. I'm going to save your life again.
That was a clip from Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw from action director David Leitch And it stars Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Jason Statham, Idris Elba, and Vanessa Kirby, along with many others and some surprises as well. The film follows lawman Luke Hobbs and outcast Deckard Shaw, who form an unlikely alliance when a cybergenetic enhanced villain threatens the future of humanity. Well, Jay, it's not every day that we get a big time summer action blockbuster spectacle here on Extra Film. And it's not every so often that we get to have a film from the Fast and Furious franchise here on Extra Film as well. So, Jay, I have to ask you, what is your relationship with the Fast and Furious franchise? What do you think of it overall? And what did you think of this latest spinoff in Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw, which is the full title, and I will be saying it like that because it deserves the respect of having
that. I'm going to hold you to that because it is obviously artistically relevant to have it in front, not just a marketing ploy.
Oh, no,
the Fast and Furious franchise, the Fast and Furious franchise, I love it, and I really don't think it gets enough credit for being in a time where we call for diversity in movies. We do not give enough credit to the Fast and Furious franchise for having such a diverse cast and crew as well. The directors have been very diverse, and it's this really heightened, great action franchise that entirely embraces what it is. It is a very, what we said at the beginning of the movie, it's about family, but everyone buys into it. It's very cheesy, but the key is that all of the actors are on board for it. And in Hobbs and Shaw, you gotta give them credit. They certainly nail in on a very unique tone. However, the tone is, it's different than the rest of the Fast and Furious franchise. And if I'm being honest, it infuriated me. I'm a cynical person. And I found this movie to be one of the most cynical movies I've seen this year. It's like this and The Lion King as far as movies that I think the artistic elements were put on the back burner. Lion King obviously was made as a direct remake to the original film with new technology where it didn't really feel like anyone involved was enthusiastic about what they were making. And this film, I do think everybody was kind of excited for it, but the entire conceit of the film is they should have made every actor in this movie wink when they said every single line. There's self-awareness, and then there is what this movie is, which is so meticulously crafted in every single scene to represent the best version of the actors in the film. It's almost like a parody of the Fast and Furious films, which to me is a little mean-spirited when you're still in the middle of the Fast and Furious franchise. And I thought Fast and Furious 8, whatever it was called, Furious 8, I don't know, you can't keep track of all these titles. Fate of the Furious. I'm sorry, Charlize Theron's braids, I should have remembered that. But I thought that was maybe the worst one yet, and then I think this has surpassed it as the worst one yet. And this is entirely up my alley. It should be a movie that I really like. I love bombast, and I love self-knowing stupidity. But this movie, to me, is not stupid. It is entirely calculated to pretend to be stupid, but make you want to think it's smart. What makes the Fast and Furious franchise so good to me is that everyone is embracing. They are really playing everything straight. And I truly think that Vin Diesel, this movie made me appreciate Vin Diesel as an actor because Vin Diesel really buys into the family elements and the really personal plot and thematic devices of the Fast and Furious films. And in this movie, it is Jason Statham and The Rock saying, look at how cool we are. Aren't we really cool? And aren't we a little bit above the Fast and Furious franchise? Because it is not of a piece with the rest of the franchise. They have superheroes. Idris Elba is he's a robot man. He's a cyborg. He's a superhuman. And great, like they've been superheroes in these movies for a while. But now to literally make them cyborgs is just, I don't know what it says about the franchise moving forward. And I think the box office is indicative of the idea that it doesn't feel of a piece with the movies that we have seen. And it almost feels like a betrayal of what we have seen before to me. Mm-hmm. And I don't hold the Fast and Furious franchise as some sort of sacred cow or anything, but there is a certain tone that the Fast and Furious films have set. It is one of a kind. It has made it a very unique entity in film today. And this movie was anything but that. And it was so winking and so knowing. It really does feel like a Deadpool movie for reasons that we will get to in addition to just the sheer movie itself. But obviously David Leitch did Deadpool 2. Mm-hmm. And this is a movie where everyone knows they're in a movie. There are references to the personal lives of the character in the movie. The Rock does his famous eyebrow thing as like a, hey, remember my eyebrow thing? And that's the entire movie. It's just people doing things that people already know about in an effort to be funny. And that did not do it for me. And there's a bunch of other stuff that I didn't like. But at the core of the film, the entire conceit of it rubbed me the wrong way.
Well, this is an absolute shock. And I'm waiting for the rug to be pulled out for me, because this is your movie, man. This is a movie built for you, Jay.
It is. You are correct.
And I'm completely shocked.
It is bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's bad.
Because, Jay, my friend, my co-host,
yes, sir.
I agree with everything you just said. This movie is completely unnecessary. It is completely stupid for all the wrong reasons.
There is a good version of this movie.
Yeah, somewhere
in this movie.
It's somewhere in this movie.
It's not unnecessary. They just did it poorly.
Yeah. Look, David Leitch, who directed or co-directed one of the best action films of the decade, and John Wick, and did a pretty good job with the action and not necessarily a story with Atomic Blonde. And he did, you know, pretty good job with Deadpool 2. I thought the more I've seen that movie, the more I appreciate it.
I don't like Atomic Blonde or Deadpool 2.
Oh, okay. Those are movies that I think have gotten better.
I think they picked the wrong co-director of John Wick to build all these franchises.
I was just about to say, I think that this proves that David Leitch, maybe that first John Wick was more another director than him, because the action sequences in this movie, Jay, are quite boring. For a Fast and Furious movie, your action sequences cannot be boring. There's a car chase scene that feels just like a generic car chase scene, or something that I might even see out of like an Iron Man movie. It doesn't even feel like it belongs in the Fast and Furious franchise. There's the opening stuff, which is the hand-to-hand combat stuff, or when we're introduced to Idris Elba. None of it's compelling. None of it's interesting. The stuff in the third act of this film is so ridiculous and so over the top that you can't even be wowed by it, because it's just boring. And that's a terrible thing to say about a movie, but it's true. And all the jokes, all the humor, all the wink, wink to the camera stuff that producers and stars Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Jason Statham do in this movie are nails on a chalkboard, stressfully making me angry thinking about it. Because in the moment, it's just nothing. It doesn't mean anything. And obviously, Jay, it's been talked about on the internet and it's been rumored around Hollywood that Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Vin Diesel do not get along. And it's been ever since, I believe, Fast 6 that has been the case, because, you know, The Rock was brought in from Fast 5 to kind of give that franchise a little bit of a boost, right?
And he's been an important
figure ever since.
The kind of turnaround, this new era of Fast and Furious.
Exactly. Ever since 5, this franchise has had, you know, the Nas cranked all the way back up in the car, if it were.
Yeah.
And
it got hit in the Nas button with a rock.
Yeah. And
a Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson, yes. And to me, he was great in 5, great in 6, and pretty good in 7. Fast 8 was the problem.
Oh, I think he's great Fast, in 7.
Fast 8. Yeah. Oh, yeah. When he comes out of the hospital, breaks out the,
yep.
the yeah, he's great.
The minigun.
But Fast, yeah, but Fast 8 is when we start focusing more on him, right? Where he comes the de facto leader of the family because Dom's, you know, in that film has turned dark for reasons if you want to go and watch the family.
Because you need, you need a new co-lead because Paul Walker passed away.
Exactly, right? And that movie is not good. And a lot of that has to do
very bad
with the fact that, I'm sorry to say it, The Rock is not Paul Walker. The Rock is not Vin Diesel. He is not Fast and Furious. This movie is not also a Fast Charlize and Furious Theron's movie. Charlize
dreadlocks, but
yeah, she's, yeah. Yeah, which are cinematic nightmare. Every time you mention them,
she should have been arrested. Yeah. That's a crime. Well,
they're bad.
A felony, in fact.
Bad. Yes. But Jay, this doesn't feel like a Fast and Furious film. This feels like a movie that Dwayne The Rock Johnson would produce because this feels like Skyscraper, or this feels like Jumanji, or this feels like, you know, Rampage. It feels like those kinds of movies. It doesn't feel like a Fast and Furious movie because you mentioned it, family, right? The family stuff that is shoehorned together in here comes from Jason Statham's character, and it's just bad. It makes no sense. It's boring. It's borderline, you know, when you think about it, just falls apart. It's infuriating.
It's insincere compared to what we're used to with the original movies, where everyone, maybe it's because their careers would be nothing without the movies that it works, but it is, they truly believe that they are this Fast and Furious family.
Yeah. And you spent and two in this decades movie, with
it's
them.
The Rock and Jason Statham, who are brands in and of themselves, mm-hmm. and they are not cohesive enough together to become a family. And they do try to shoehorn that into the movie, but it does not work.
No, it doesn't. And these guys are former villains turned good guys, which for a lot of people that love the franchise don't really want to cuddle up to Jason Statham because, you know, he killed Han and Justice for Han and all that stuff. And so it's really tough to see myself rooting for these characters anyway, even though that's exactly what the film wants to do. I have a lot more to say about this film, but Jay, I want to kick it back to you. I mean, I want to talk about Idris Elba in this movie, which is a perfect villain, but it's completely wasted. Jay, do you see Elba here as even a glimmer of hope, a guy who is also just a brand within himself, right? He's been playing a lot of bad guys lately.
Yes. He's been playing a lot of bad guys and he's good in this. He's not great in this. His character is bad. The script around him, I think, is very bad. And he does the best with the material that he is given. He has there's no story behind him. Really. We get no background into why he is this super soldier, maybe like a little dollop of it, but we really get no idea of his motivation. He is evil for the sake of being the bad guy in a movie, and that's just not really enough for me, especially when, like you said, the action here is so bland. Mm-hmm. It's so bland. The Fast and Furious movies have at least one incredible set piece in all of them, whether it's jumping between three skyscrapers in the Middle East or jumping out of a plane with cars and parachuting to the ground, or driving through the streets of Brazil with a giant safe behind the car. This movie has nothing interesting about it. It's a bunch of hand-to-hand combat, a bunch of people driving in the woods of Samoa, and a bunch of stuff exploding.
Yeah.
I cannot tell you a moment, like a specific moment of anything terribly interesting. Maybe The Rock pulling down a helicopter by himself, by his own pure strength.
Yeah, but that's kind of cool. But that's in the trailer for this movie. So
it is.
And I have to say that about this, Jay. This marketing plan that they had is awful because they give away a lot of the action beats in the trailer. Like there were 3-4 minute trailers for this
thing. Theater, I guess. I guess that's good marketing.
I mean,
I don't know.
I don't get it. And I, as my thoughts on Elba, I think he's completely wasted in this movie. He is a great actor. Well, Idris Elba is a great actor compared to everybody on screen. Besides maybe Helen Mirren, he's the best actor on screen, and he's completely wasted in this villain role, which makes absolutely no sense. Like they are chasing this super virus, right? Which feels very Mission Impossible 2. this virus that's contagious and blah, 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 and it's to destroy the world, and it gets put inside somebody and they have to find a way to extract it and all this stuff. Very Mission Impossible 2, by the way, Jay. But he is like this cyborg Terminator meets Superman, you know, hybrid. And he can control his bike with his mind, and he can control things with his mind and do all these crazy things. He's virtually indestructible. And you're like, why do you need this virus? Like, there's no sense to have the literal thing that they are chasing and running around for. This guy's got this technology that could destroy the world. And this film is not interested in exploring any of that. There is a shadow organization that's in this movie that is established that is completely wasted, has no business.
Yeah, I kept waiting to reveal who the main guy is, and they never, main guy or girl is, but they never did.
Never did it, and they were just like, well, you know, we have our eye on you, and then bam, you
I
never
even
get
stayed for
anything.
The post-credit scene because I knew they were going to do it, and they didn't.
And nothing. And it is lazy writing by Chris Morgan, the screenwriter, who just, for some reason, just said, hey, I get to work with The Rock and Jason Statham. They're going to yell some jokes that don't work, really. I mean, they should work, because even in The Fate of the Furious and Furious 7, the banter back and forth from Hobbs and Shaw is pretty fun. In this movie, I didn't find any of it fun.
It's not the entire movie.
Yeah, but exactly. It's not the entire movie. It's not just these two. We have the family. We have Vin Diesel. We have other things that are motivating us to get through, you know, the movies like that in the Fast and Furious franchise. In this, it's literally just these guys, anything you can do, I can do better. And it's not interesting for a movie that has no business also, Jay, being 2 hours and 15 minutes long. This movie is so long.
Well, every Fast and Furious movie since 5, I think, has been very long. And so I understand them being like, oh, well, we'll just keep doing what we've been doing, even though 8 was poorly received. They're just like, okay, we've hit on a formula here, and we had a little bit of a hiccup, but this movie doesn't follow anything about that formula. And it's just, you're right, it feels so long. It feels so long, and it feels like it's really pandering to the international crowd with this unnecessary globe-trotting.
Oh my God.
Where the locations,
I thought the
in
movie
the
was
really don't
over.
Mean anything.
I thought the movie was over, and then we literally had an entire 30 more minutes of this movie. And I went,
oh, when they go to Samoa?
Yeah, and I'm like,
I think that's a lot longer than 30 minutes. I mean, think that's a solid 45.
I mean, I would hope it was 30 minutes, but yeah, it was probably more 45. And I was just like, wow, we're really, I thought this movie was done. Like, I thought, you know, we were good. And then, yeah, it's like 45 more minutes.
Everything in Samoa is absolutely dreadful.
Yeah, because it's trying to set up.
The movie just screeches to a halt, even though it was already going slow.
Yeah.
It is completely stuck in that section.
Yeah, because it's trying to set up this movie to be like the other Fast and Furious franchises, right? That's the Hobbs that you don't know, and he's got this long-lost family. Which doesn't work. And then Shaw with his continuous stuff with his family and his sister and his brother and his mom in prison and all this stuff. It doesn't work. None of it works.
And I really like Vanessa Kirby. I think she's totally wasted in this. I've heard a lot of people call her like a bright spot in this film. Ooh. She doesn't do anything.
Yeah. She's kind of just like reactionary, or she's used as, you know, literally to get this virus or literally to save. She is just a device.
She is the MacGuffin.
Yeah, she is. She turns into the MacGuffin halfway through this movie just so that Jason Statham and Dwayne The Rock Johnson can save the day. And it's once again infuriating. The decision making from a storytelling standpoint, visual standpoint, direction, tone, it's just a complete mess. But Jay, I think that a lot of our fans are going to be very disappointed in us because we hyped up this movie to be very fun for us, and it turned out to be a complete bummer.
I thought this was going to be my next Aquaman.
Yeah, I thought this was going to be like a Hellboy review where we were fun within the sheer madness of that movie. But Jay, any final thoughts you have on Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw?
I want to bring up the cameos in the film, and I will go into a little bit of spoiler talk here, all so right. skip ahead a little bit. If you do not know who the cameos are in this film, in 3, 2, 1. And now we'll talk about the ridiculously over-the-top, unnecessary, really winky-winky cameos, which really brought that self-awareness, the obnoxious self-awareness, up to level 100. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned that Leach did Deadpool 2. Ryan Reynolds, Deadpool himself, is in this movie. And first of all, Ryan Reynolds is incapable of being anyone but Deadpool at this point.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's like in real life.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that he is any different than Deadpool at this point, because that's all he does in anything now, whether it's as Pikachu or in this movie. It just seems to be who his persona is now. And it is playing to that. It is playing to the idea of Ryan Reynolds, not a character in a movie. And because of that, I found his appearance incredibly grating. And then you have The Rock calling in a favor to his buddy Kevin Hart, who he's been in multiple movies with.
Yep.
And it's just, I talked about the last act of the movie bringing the film to a halt. The scene on the plane where Kevin Hart is an air marshal is one of the worst 5 minutes of film I've seen this year.
Yeah.
Where they just say, all right, Kevin Hart, like, be funny in the middle of this action movie. It's so disjointed, just like everything in this movie. And oh my gosh, there's another one that I'm forgetting, isn't there? There's another cameo, or am I wrong?
I think that one of the actors from Deadpool 2 was in this film. He played the other guy.
Rob Delaney.
Yeah, Rob Delaney, yes.
Is the other one that I was thinking of as the CIA agent who was in Deadpool 2, had a great like side cameo bit character in that film, and he's an FBI agent here who just totally does not work. He's very bad. He's in the scene again for 2 minutes, and he feels so out of place in this movie and in this Fast and Furious world. It doesn't make sense. And then you add on top of that what I think is one of the worst scores of the year, because again, this film is a comedy, but it's from the same guy who does the John Wick scores. So imagine a John Wick score played over this comedy action movie, whereas John Wick is fully committed to being a playing everything very seriously. Even though those movies are very, very funny, everything is played straight.
Yeah.
And in this movie, nothing is played straight. Absolutely nothing. So then you have this score that is really bearing down on you, that this is like really important action-y stuff with a lot of stakes. And meanwhile, they're just cracking jokes. And it seems like there's a lot of improv here that just does not work. And I think The Rock is mega talented. I think Statham is mega talented. You see him in Spy, which Paul Feig is very known for his he lets his actors improvise. And Jason Statham is so good in Spy.
I mean,
and again, that's probably a bit part, which has something to do with it. But in this movie, they let him loose a little bit with the improv. Him and The Rock have some back and forth. And it gets really tired really fast. And you add on to that none of the action works. And there are probably 7 set pieces in this movie, and none of them are interesting. That's just going to sink a Fast and Furious movie into the ground. And what you end up with is really a pretty dreadful, dreadful movie. It's bad. It's bad, Ryan. It's a bad movie.
Yeah, I know, Jay. And I know that's really disappointing for you. And I can feel it, because
crying. I'm crying. I have tears in my eyes.
Yeah, and that's probably the most funny thing that you've said tonight, because it's probably true, and it's funnier than anything in this movie, right? Because I do agree with you, as for my final thoughts, that these cameos are awful. These cameos can kill a franchise. And I was kind of into like the first 5 minutes of the movie, I guess, because I was like, oh, okay, this is what we're going to get. You know, we're going to get the cocky Rock, and we're going to get like Statham being all cool, right? And then Ryan Reynolds sits down, and I go, I look at my theater. My theater didn't even react. Like, I don't even think people recognize that was Ryan Reynolds, because we were so shocked by it. And because it's just so jarring.
I rolled my eyes when he showed up. Because,
yeah.
I mean, I'm sure a lot of people don't understand that this is from the guy who did Deadpool 2.
Yeah.
But knowing that it was Leech and he was just like, hey, Ryan, you want to be on the set of Fast and Furious? It's just this way to, like, get people talking about our movie, even though it makes no sense in the context of the film.
Yeah, and he's not even, like...
And that's the entire movie.
Yeah, it is. And that scene, much like many other scenes, goes on forever. And I do agree with you. I'm sure some people really find Kevin Hart funny and really think that he has great chemistry with The Rock. And actually, that Jumanji film that I lumped in with a lot of his other bad films is not a bad movie. It's a good surprise from a couple of years ago. But man, he is awful in this movie. And it's, you're right, Jay. It's right up there with Climax. It's some of the worst things I've seen on film this year. It's so jarring. They're just like, oh my God, what is next? Like, is Vince McMahon and Stone Cold Steve Austin going to walk in the door? Like, who else is going to walk in this revolving
Roman
door?
Roman Reigns is in this movie.
Yeah, and then, yeah, Roman Reigns walks in. So, I mean, I guess that's your WWE connection. And, you know, I just hate it seeing all this talent be completely wasted. And I do agree with you. I think Dwayne The Rock Johnson is a complete package, a very charismatic action star, you know, very much our version of, or a modern day version of Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I think he can be really good when he's in the right project. And Statham,
I want him to challenge himself so bad.
Yeah. And Statham, like you said, he is hysterical in Spy. I just rewatched that a couple weeks ago and I texted you and I was like, did you ever see Spy? Cause he's great opposite Melissa McCarthy in that movie. That is one of my favorite comedic performances in quite some time. I believe if I would have done the exercise, he probably would have made a best supporting actor for that year for me. He is so memorable, so scene stealing in that movie. And yes, Vanessa Kirby, she is really good on The Crown. She was really good in Fallout last year, the Mission Impossible film that I loved. It was in my top five. And Idris Elba is, like I said, a great actor in Helen Mirren and Eddie Marsden and Elsa Gonzalez and all these people. You're just like, this should work, and it doesn't. And I pray Dwayne The Rock Johnson is listening to this so that, Dwayne, you need to go crawling back to Vin Diesel and the boys and say, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. This is your franchise.
No, just go to Stahelski. Skip Leech. Go to Stahelski, who understands that.
No! You need to build another spin-off a narrative movie.
Into
I
every
don't want another one.
Fight.
No.
No, get him. Don't. Do another movie. Do a different movie. Mm-mm. But understand. No, Hollywood, understand. I mean, I want John Wick movies until I die.
Yeah.
But Hollywood, understand that Stahelski is the one that was the glue behind John Wick, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Because it's clear that, I mean, nothing has come close to either John Wick 2 or 3 that Leech has made.
Yeah, I mean, get Stahelski to do the next Fast and Furious movie. I know that they got Justin Lin making 9 with Diesel.
Which, cool. Like, I'm glad he's back.
Yeah, I'm glad he's back because he gets what movie he's really making. Good. He gets it.
His Star Trek movie was really good.
Yeah. He knows how to make really fun, entertaining films. And yes, I want these characters, Hobbs and Shaw, I want them in the Fast and Furious. I don't want them doing their own thing because it doesn't work. And
because they're not characters.
No, they are help pieces for a longer story that fits within the Vin Diesel family narrative. They are pieces that help that story move along. They are not pieces that spin off and create their own franchise.
I think one thing is clear. Without Ludacris, the series is ludicrous.
Without Tyrese Gibson, who went off on these people on Twitter, I guess he was right.
Take
the family out, it means nothing.
Without Diesel, this franchise seems like it's totally out of gas.
Oh, okay. Well, he had it. He had to make one more pun. And for more thoughts on Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw, and maybe some more puns, you can go to our Letterboxd page at letterboxd.com/insessionfilm.
And if you agree or disagree with our takes, you can let us know by leaving a comment on our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or you can email us in long form at insessionfilm@gmail.com.
All right, guys, we're going to put this car in park, and coming up on the other side, we're going to go and sharpen our weapons for a discussion on Sword of Truss. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back. Oh, Alabama.
the spare chain. You got to feel strange. And now the moment is all that if and out of bounds. You got the weight on your shoulders that's breaking your back. Your Cadillac has got a wheel in the ditch and a wheel on.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAM Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
In a world where podcasts already seem to address every imaginable subject, one man broke new ground with a seemingly random obsession about exploding helicopters in movies. He was a podcaster on the edge, a maverick broadcaster who played by his own rules. Now, he has a last chance to talk about the strange way helicopters explode in film. Exploding Helicopter, available on iTunes and Podomatic now. Think you know about chopper fireballs? Think again.
Hello, In Session Film Podcast listeners. We take a moment to interrupt this daily programming to bring you the next Best Picture podcast run by myself, Matt Neglia, where Michael Schwartz, Will Matheny, Dan Chiesese, Ryan C. Showers, and a slew of others, we are all on a search to find what is going to be the next Best Picture winner at the Oscars. Join us on our journey as we look at foreign films, documentaries, independent movies, as well as big action blockbusters. Everyone is a contender until they are not. Be sure to listen to us on all of the podcasting networks, including iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, and on CastBox. Be sure to come check us out on nextbestpicture.com, where we also have movie reviews, weekly polls, the before-mentioned podcast, as well as a lot more content revolving around the award season. Thank you so much for listening to me ramble. Now, back to JD and Brandon.
You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast Extra Film segment. Ryan, I came here looking for something, and I heard you have it.
Yeah, Jay, here you go. Here are all those leftovers from that Thanksgiving dinner that you made.
What you were looking at?
Yes.
Is a genuine relic that supports the actual truth, which is the South.
Mm-hmm.
Won the war.
Okay. The South won the war?
That's right. This is something you want to keep under your hat till you're ready to
seems
not
like
keep
pretty
it
big news.
The best way to do this is through concrete evidence.
Is this antique roadshow for racists?
Up to $50,000.
God damn it.
What's the deal?
70-30 sounds fair to me.
Don't, please don't touch.
I
don't
can't touch the tag.
Don't touch the tag.
Honey, 70-30, is it 70 for us?
No.
No deal.
30 for us. No deal.
There's gonna be other offers on this, because the word's out.
Word's out.
Came here looking for something. Heard you have it.
Can we narrow it down a little?
We're looking for a sword.
All right.
A sword.
Why was that so hard?
It wasn't hard.
Wasn't hard.
Why did we have to take that route to get there?
That was the trailer for Sword of Trust, the latest film from indie darling director Lynn Shelton. The film stars Marc Maron, John Bass, Michaela Watkins, and Gillian Bell. And the plot summary is as follows. When Cynthia and Mary show up to collect Cynthia's inheritance from her deceased grandfather, the only item she's received is an antique sword that he believed to be proof that the South won the Civil War. This thing is rocking a very nice score on Rotten Tomatoes, I believe a 96%.
Mm-hmm.
It's been very well reviewed. Ryan, this was at South by Southwest, which you attended, but you did not see this movie. Instead, you chose to go see Us, which, fair. This is one that you really wanted us to go check out and review, and I gotta say, I think there's going to be a really interesting conversation that comes out of it, but Ryan, when you saw this movie, did you feel like you wanted to wield your sword against the critics or put it back in its sheath?
Well, Jay, just to correct you up front, I didn't see the world premiere, the first showing of this at South by Southwest.
I said you saw Us instead.
Yes, but I did see this movie at South by Southwest.
Oh, okay, okay, so okay.
I'm just correcting you, my friend, but...
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. But other than that, I would say upon my first viewing at the festival, I was very high on this movie. And I was really jonesing for it because I didn't, you know, see any trailers or anything for it, know what this movie was about. I just heard, you know, you hear buzz, right? And you just like, they say it's pretty good and it's pretty funny. And I walked in the movie and about the first 5-10 minutes, I'm like, this movie's not funny at all. And then it takes a sharp turn and it's really funny and it has a lot of heart to it. And I really enjoyed it. And while the score dipped a little bit for me upon initial reaction, I still really enjoyed this movie. And I think it does have a lot of heart to it. And I think it is surprisingly funny. And there are some performances in here that we'll talk about later that are really good. But I think that this premise is interesting, right? Because it's talking about internet rumors. It's talking about, you know, kind of deep state, joking about that, talking about what's real, what's not. And Jay, stay with me on this. Stay with me on this and don't go crazy.
We're about to go in a weird direction.
We're going to go in a weird direction here. This past weekend, I was fortunate to be on a podcast for Kevin Jacobson's Patreon for And the Runner Up Is, where I talked about...
Oh, that's pretty cool. Never been invited, but that's okay.
Inglourious Basterds, right?
Good movie.
And how Quentin Tarantino likes to, within that film and a lot of his films later, likes to do revisionist history. Right, Jay?
For sure. Yeah, we talked about it with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. On our bonus content. Go listen to it.
Bonus content. Yeah. And I think that that's what this film is talking about, though with an even wilder, crazier premise, right? It is talking about this, you know, what if the South had won the Civil War? And I found the comedy within that to be really interesting. This kind of, you know, they stumble upon the sword, they take it to this pawn shop run by Mark Maron and his assistant, John Bass. And they have to go in on this deal because they find out that the sword is worth a lot of money within that circle that believe this stuff. And so it is this, you know, in this ruse to get this money, they have to kind of fake their way in believing this as well. And it's how far a human being will test themselves to believe something that is completely false. And I think that that's an interesting dynamic. But the stuff that really gets me, though, in this movie falls a lot to do not with the sword and the Civil War stuff, which is really fun and, like I said, pretty amusing. It's actually the Mark Maron stuff and his relationship with Deirdre, played by director Lynn Shelton in the film.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's really touching, really sweet. And there is a monologue that I feel like is improvised, but not really written, or maybe it is or it isn't.
Shelton likes to give her actors a lot of freedom.
Yeah.
So and very, it's, very possibly like she could have given some direction and then sort of let it play out.
Yeah. And she lets it play out to be one of the most memorably beautiful scenes of the year when Mark Maron is talking about his relationship with Deirdre. And I found it to be a really great scene wrapped up in an ending that ends very abruptly, very weird. And so I'm a little bit more mixed than when I first saw it, but that doesn't mean I still don't think that there's a lot in here that's fun to talk about. And I have some more stuff, that I'll get to later, but I'm really more interested in hearing what you have to think about this film, my friend.
It's a weird one. It's a movie that I think I said on Twitter last night, I think it feels at odds with itself because it is at its best when it is being a hangout movie, but it is surrounded by this really zany plot. The best scene in the movie is a very extended scene where they're hanging out in the back of a van and just talking. Is that the scene that you were talking about with the monologue?
Monologue is the second part. The first part of that is Mary and Cynthia, played by Michaela Watkins and Jillian Bell, talking about their lives and how they met. And then the second part leads into Mel, played by Mark Maron, talking about his relationship. And it's a It's great.
It's a really, really good scene. And it's, unfortunately, I think everything else kind of undermines the idea of these really well fleshed out characters. Because I think she really does create a very interesting crew in this film. I think just about every single character except the Southern bigots, which, you know, understandably, you have to kind of make those guys caricatures.
Yeah.
Although I do have a criticism of being a guy from the South and having a wife who is from Birmingham, where this film does take place. It does feel like a film made by a woman who grew up in Seattle about Birmingham, which it is.
Yeah.
And that's not a huge criticism. It's just, it's kind of the reality of a lot of movies like this. You have these kind of mumblecore-y interpretations of the South, and especially in the political environment we are in right now, I understand that a lot of people are angry, and you have to reflect the kind of the surreality of what is going on in some of the areas surrounding me. And you look at people like, I mean, Alex Jones, who has been banned on every social media or like every video platform,
hey, he's from my neck
still has a giant audience. And yeah, now I'm talking in your neck of the woods over there. Is he based in Austin?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. So he's just down the road from you. And he still has this bizarre audience where he just tells people these bold-faced lies about the New World Order and stuff, and they just
believe it. He knows
it
to be false, and yet he keeps making money off of it, man.
And that is very much in line with what we find out happens in this movie. And we do live it also kind of weirdly is similar to Under the Silver Lake, which is a movie about conspiracy theories and how people in the most twisted of times are able to manipulate their own minds to believe the most unbelievable things to justify their own unhappiness. And this is sort of along those same lines, because it is a movie largely about unhappy people, especially Marc Maron, who is this guy. He's from New Mexico. He now lives in Birmingham. His entire job is swindling people out of their formerly prized possessions. And he's in this very complicated relationship with the character played by Lynn Shelton, who, when she first appears on screen, my first thought was, why would she cast herself with a man as the love interest of a man 20 years older than her? Turns out she is 1 year younger than Marc Maron. So I was wrong there, which is to say that Lynn Shelton looks incredible and Marc Maron looks like he's lived, he's got some miles on those tires. But you know, good for Lynn Shelton. She looks great. But anyway, Maron's character, he's a pretty complicated one, and while I don't love Maron, and I have a hard time separating his podcast persona, because that's how I think a lot of people were introduced to him. I mean, he was one of the first guys to have a really huge podcast. And every time he played the guitar in this movie, I got annoyed, because that's all he freaking talks about on his podcast is how he plays guitar. And he really went out of his way to play
guitar.
It's
mostly a music podcast. I mean, that's really what it is.
Like, no, well, it, you know, he loves. Well, he definitely has a lot of musicians on. That is true.
Yeah, his best episodes are when he has musicians on, because you know.
Well, he'll have Neil Young on and talk about like types of guitars for an hour.
Yeah,
and you know that's clearly kind of his passion. His passions are stand up comedy and music, and those are kind of the best episodes of his podcast. I haven't listened to his podcast in a very long time, actually, but back in the day when I did listen to it, those were always kind of the best episodes. But he's kind of coming to his own as a performer. He's good in Glow, in what I've seen of that, which is not the whole series, but from what I've seen, he's very good in Glow. He's kind of harnessed a particular on-screen persona, and I think it really plays in this film, which is his character, his melancholic performance works around this zany premise, whereas I think the lackadaisical nature of the plot doesn't really work in this narrative of conspiracy theories and kind of zaniness.
Yeah.
But I think Maron is a very solid lead performer. I actually think all the performances are very good. I think the structure of the film is the problem. And for me, it made it a really mixed bag, and one that I don't really know that I could recommend. I remember when I turned it on, you mentioned how it starts out kind of slow. I turned it on for my wife, and I was like, she was like, oh, what is this? And I said, I don't know. It's supposed to be a comedy. And then 10 minutes in, she was like, this is not funny. I'm going to sleep. And that's what happened. And I understand that, because during the first 10 minutes, I was like, oh my, does she think I like lied to her? Because there is nothing going on so far. And she probably thought, oh, this is one of those J movies yet again. And he's putting me through it again. But that's really what I thought it was. And that is not what it is, even though that is what it is at some points. And it's kind of all over the place. So for me, it's a very mixed bag, one that I am teetering on the edge of recommending, but not quite all the way there.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's one that that I like more, I think, than you did. You know, it's not like I love this movie. Like, it's one of the best movies I've seen this year, or one of the best movies I saw at the festival. But I thought it was one of the more intriguing ones because of what it's talking about. And you eloquently mentioned it, you know, this idea of, you know, what is true, what is not, and the world of living in fake news. And yeah, I do feel the caricatures that they are representing in here. But I think that's, you know, just,
it sucks to say it, but that's how it has to be like that. People who believe that the South won the Civil War.
Yeah. I think, you know, I think it's talking more about the subject matter than it is really about the
it's weird that the only logical person in the movie is a transplant from New Mexico. It was just a little weird.
Yeah, it is weird. But I do think, though, there is one performance out of all the crazy South won the Civil War conspiracy theorists by Toby Huss, who plays Hog Jaws.
Yeah.
Oh my God. What a performance in this movie. He's insane. He matches Marin for, you know, Marin being the kind of calm, you know, kind of cutting comedy. Huss totally knows what movie he's in. And he's hamming it up throughout the entire part. There is a point at the end where he's turned the tables on them and he's got them like dancing, you know, like calling them all puppet masters and having them all dance. I was laughing my ass off during that. I thought it was so great.
He's just a great character actor.
He's so good in this. And yes, I do think that Watkins and Bell and Bass do a good job supporting Marin. Because I think that's what happens in this movie, is like they're more supporting him, and he's obviously like the leader of this group. And Marin does work great with Sheldon, because she actually directed a couple of episodes on Glow. So they got this rapport working together show. And that's why she brought him over to this. And I think, yeah, she really does work well with him. And, you know, that moment in the car, I can't stress this enough. It is maybe for some people, scene. You know, it should be a scene in another movie and it shouldn't be in this one, but somehow weirdly it worked for me, because, you know, this guy is very tough and he's, you know, he doesn't open up and he's very set in his ways and, you know, very Marc Maron-esque, very, you know, kind of like Larry David-esque, just kind of set in your ways. Right. And
it's just a guy talking about all the regrets in his life, exactly, which is what Marin has made a career out of for the last decade.
Exactly. And you're also sitting there thinking, like, this could be, you know, they could end up going to this ranch and getting shot. So that's why he's talking about all this. He's trying to come to terms with the fact that, you know, his girlfriend or ex-girlfriend or his muse or the person that he loves keeps harming themselves or keeps going down a path that they just can't see themselves going down anymore. And he's tired of putting up with it, but he's drawn to her like a moth to flame because he loves her so much, you know? And at the end, when all the dust is settled over this crazy ending, it goes back to being very soft and melancholy and kind of just like a sweet ending.
And it's just really kind of ends.
Yeah. And it's really weird, you know, because you think it's going to end one way and then it ends a completely different way. And I guess that, while I think the tones work separately, I do kind of agree with you, Jay. I think overall together, it's herky jerky up and down. And I kind of feel that maybe they should have been separated a little bit, but I don't know. I had a lot of fun with it. So I kind of was just along for the ride. You know?
Yeah, you mentioned that one scene might not work for some people. I mean, that's the scene for me that works the most.
Yeah,
and makes
not work for some people, just not work in this movie, like being a part of.
Yeah,
this
well,
movie.
It, well, that I mean. Was yeah. that might be the problem for me, is it works so well for me that I wish the rest of the movie was different.
Yeah,
and that's kind of what it comes down to with this one is it's such a mixed bag, and it tries to be a lot of different things at once, and Marc Maron is not really the guy to lead a zany comedy, which is not what this is, and that's not what Lynn Shelton has built her career around. But the plot itself, the script is a real, it's a, kind of like a parody of a, of kind of the times that we're living in right now. It's a satire, which is what this is as well, but it's inside of this weird hangout movie that will be very inaccessible for a lot of people. And the parts that it's kind of weird because I think mainstream audiences will like, might like the parts that I didn't like and will hate the parts that I liked. So it is a really hard one for me to recommend, and I don't even recommend it as far as my own experience goes. So for people that have similar taste to me, but it's a weird movie. It's an interesting movie. I love that Lynn Shelton is out there still making the movies that she wants to make. Mm-hmm. She's a very unique, independent voice in the world of film today. I just need her to stay a little more grounded, I think. Mm-hmm. I think she draws a lot of the characters very broadly, whereas most of the core characters, I think, are so well done and so well crafted that I wish the rest of the movie was that way. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to ruminate in this world with them instead of going along through the machinations of the plot. But Ryan, why don't you give me a final thought or two on Sword of Trust before we get out of here?
Yeah, Jay, I do want to say with my final thoughts that I think in terms of comedy, I think Lynn Shelton makes some really interesting comedies. I think Your Sister's Sister and Hump Day are some really funny films, and she is a real standout in terms of the mumblecore genre. And I think that she continues to keep making some really fun, interesting comedies with this. I do want to give a shout out, and I know this for some people is going to, they're going to roll their eyes at, but I didn't know that Marc Maron was playing a lot of the guitar and that kind of like riff at the end of the movie that was playing. I actually thought it was really beautiful and really sweet and went with that overall storyline that he was going with.
Wait, Marc Maron plays guitar?
I know.
I've been listening to his podcast for years.
I never knew.
It's crazy.
But I thought it was a really beautiful piece of music that really goes well with that beautiful scene. And he's a real standout of this movie. I mean, while it's, the film is maybe depreciated a little bit for me, and I still think it's a fun 90 minutes, and it's one that I think you could, you know, still recommend to watch overall. I think it's mostly due to him, and I think he's really doing something kind of shocking here and giving you like this really grounded and real performance, matched with Watkins and Bell, who have really good chemistry as this like couple. We haven't really talked about them. It's like kind of having them tell the story multiple times. Right. And I found that to be one of the funny things is like they have the story on paper and it's a completely ridiculous story. And yet there is a complete game of telephone done by every single person trying to tell this story.
That's pretty good.
Multiple times. And it just goes to show that the story is ridiculous. And even when you know all the facts, you're still going to screw it up because it's so dumb and over the top to believe this. And I've found that they play that humor so well. And yeah, I would love to see these four back in a film together or maybe working with Lynn Shelton again down the road. They had all great chemistry and yeah, Huss again. I mean, Hog Jaws is the character name. I mean, you can't get any better than that. I mean, he's a scene stealer of the year so far. Just, you know, overall pretty enjoyable film. I'd recommend it. It's, you know, it's one that you can watch at home cause it's on VOD. You don't have to go to the theaters right now. And if you can get through that first 5-10 minutes, you know, like your wife, Jay, I think that you'll have a really fun time with this movie.
Yeah. Unfortunately she did not make it, but I commend her for her efforts.
She tried.
She did. She puts up with a lot of movies that she would never watch otherwise.
So does my wife.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to give a shout out to Dan Bacadal, who plays the kind of leader of the cult.
He's great.
Or whatever they call him.
Yeah.
Or whatever you want to call that group of people. He's so good. And he is really laying it on thick, which in the moment, in the scene that he is in, really works.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like a one scene wonder in this
the
movie.
The way he
really
walks
wraps
out,
up,
you know,
yes,
too.
Yes, exactly.
It's hysterical.
Well, the way that he turns from threatening to a farce yeah. works so well. That's it's so, so funny. One of my and shout out to his chicken foot joke, which was a super group in the 2000s that like I feel like only I remember. But that joke made me laugh so hard. And I don't know, because I that chicken foot was a running joke that I had with my friends in high school. And I never thought I would hear it be brought up
it
in
was
a movie.
So random, though. In this,
it's
movie.
This
That's
weird
great.
Super group with Sammy Hagar and Joe Satriani. And he just conjured it up. I like to think it was improv. I have no idea. But
I want to say it is. It feels very improv
in
the moment.
Yeah, it was very, very funny. So big ups to him. And I do want to bring up, you mentioned Maron's riff there at the end. I didn't know that, but I was thinking throughout the film that the music was very good.
Yeah, it's Keegan DeWitt.
It also feels kind of improvised. Mm-hmm. Like somebody was kind of playing the music as they watched the film, and that's what they put over it. I have no idea how the music was made or not, but that's kind of what it felt like to me. Was it felt very naturalistic mm-hmm. in a movie that kept wavering between being naturalistic and very fictionalized, feeling very much like very stylized. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I couldn't really get all the way behind it, but there's a lot of stuff I really appreciate. And I pray that Lynn Shelton gets to keep making yeah. these unique movies and imagining her unique visions. And for that, you have to appreciate it, even if I didn't think the film worked entirely on its own merits. But if you want to see more of our thoughts, we have them on letterboxd.com at letterboxd.com/insessionfilm.
And if you agree or disagree with our takes, you can let us know by leaving a comment on our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram page, or you can email us at insessionfilm@gmail.com. And with that, that's going to do it for this week's show. Just a friendly reminder to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram while you're over there also commenting. It's always nice to just follow us since you're already there. I mean, right, Jay? They're already there.
It's very easy. You're already there.
Yeah, you know, you already searched us. You might as well just become a part of us so you can follow everything there is in session film-wise. And yes, we do try to respond to every single email that you guys send to us. That email again is insessionfilm@gmail.com.
And be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, or SoundCloud. And while you're on iTunes, please leave us a review. We would greatly appreciate it. We also have a contest running right now where if you leave us a review, you are put into a lottery to win a Blu-ray of your choice. Think about all the Blu-rays out there. You got a choice of any of them.
Wait.
Think about that.
Jay, can I enter that again?
The world is your oyster.
Can I enter that?
Ryan, I don't know. Maybe if you use some sort of alibi, you might be able to get in on that. Who knows?
Maybe I did.
Ryan,
I didn't.
I saw your review. I saw your review. I saw it. Ryan entered himself into the lottery. If he wins, we will be giving that to someone else.
No.
By any means necessary. By any
full price criterion. Necessary. You should have done it when the sale was going on.
By the way, our podcasts are syndicated every week at geekcastradio.com, the Podfix Network, and the LAM Podcast Network. And you can also check out our Listen Now page on our website at insessionfilm.com/listen-now.
And the In Session Film podcast is supported by our awesome listeners like you guys. If you want to help us out, you can go over to our website, click on insessionfilm.com, click on our main menu to find our bonus content tab. That's right.
Bonus content.
To hear our bonus content of just a small donation of 99 cents, you can check out the In Session Film store, or you can go over to insessionfilm.com/donate, and you'll see all of our information there on how you can help us out. You can hear all of our amazing shows on our mobile app for a one-time fee of $1.99. You can find our app, the Amazon market for Android devices, the Windows 10 phone store for Windows devices, and the podcast source app for iOS devices. And you can see all those details again at insessionfilm.com/apps. And just a friendly reminder, on episode 338 this week, they will be talking about the newest film, Loose, that everyone seems to be talking about and I've seen, and it's fantastic. And the top three is to be determined, but they will also be giving the responses to this week's poll and what is your favorite performance from Octavia Spencer. Jay, before we get out of here, any final thoughts you have this week, my friend?
Yes, so I saw Hobbs and Shaw today.
You did?
Shortly before we started recording, I did. And I gotta say, so it was probably 40% full at this theater. And I was in a assigned seating theater, so I had reserved my seats beforehand. And I sat down, and I had two seats on either side of me. So I was like, okay, great. I don't want to deal with any of this. And then about as the AMC promo video before the movie starts, like the trailers have already gone, we're about to start the movie, some guy comes in and he sits right next to me. Okay, so I understand you probably reserved your seat next to me. That's fine.
Oh boy.
Read the room, dude. There are seats on either side of us where you could go. I think there were four seats to my right, and he sat in the one directly beside me. And it drives me insane. I am now tensed up for the rest of the movie because this weird guy is sitting next to me.
You didn't move?
When he shouldn't have. I went to the bathroom like right when the opening credits were going because I didn't even go to the bathroom. I just sort of went out the door and then immediately came back in because I had to leave. I had to get out of that situation. And I want a public service announcement. If you are in a theater, I do not care what seat you are assigned to. Sit away from someone else if that is an option. Don't be a weirdo, all right? I'm already weird enough there being at the theater by myself.
Yeah.
Okay? I don't need it to be any more awkward than it has to. And to sit next to me in an empty theater is heinous. It is egregious. It is inhumane, I think, on a certain level. I do not want to experience the movie with you. I do not want to talk to you. I am there to watch the movie by myself. I do not want to accidentally rub my hand on the armrest between us. God forbid. So then what I do is I like get really, so I was on the left and I get really scrunched up like to the left of my seat because these are the recliner seats.
Uh-huh.
And look, they're big. Like it gets way worse than what I had to deal with. But just, it just makes me uneasy. And just chill. Everybody chill. Sit away from people if you have the opportunity. And let's all not get along by not communicating with each other.
I agree with everything you just said. I mean, Jay, it kind of makes you feel sad that we don't have the days where like theater seating was open and you could just go. And I think
I love reserved seating, but just you don't have to sit in your reserved seat. Yeah, but the problem is
with this reserved seating, this stuff like this can happen more often than.
Yeah, but you know, I also get to reserve my seat a week beforehand and show up 25 minutes late to the movie.
That's true. I agree. Worth it. Yeah, it has its faults or not.
Reserved
seating
for life.
But I mean, Jay,
because I got to get up and leave and move, but
yeah,
it's still just like the first and foremost.
Did you have like popcorn or a drink with you or anything?
No,
like that?
I had nothing. I had a drink.
Well, I mean, if you had the whole thing, it's gonna kind of look really bad.
Yeah, then it gets weird. I'm kind of
had this pizza here the whole time, you know, or something like that. But yeah, no. Well, I'm sad that you didn't get to make a friend though. I mean, it seems like it was a lovely gentleman. You know, that sat next to you.
I mean, he probably was a great guy. I don't know. Maybe I don't know. He seemed cool. I don't know. Shout out to that guy if you're listening to the podcast, which you would never know because you don't know what I look like.
Or he does.
Because this is an audio medium.
Or he does, and because he tracked you all the way to your house. Anyway.
Oh my gosh, is that what happened? Is this the fan situation?
It might. Now, I had something eerily similar, though, Jay, happened to me a couple years back when I saw Silence, and I've yet to see that movie because I don't want to have the PTSD of that moment ever happen again. But you're never going to watch Hobbs and Shaw, so you might never have to have that experience of thinking about this.
That is true, but that is not a Scorsese film. Yes. You should probably watch that again.
I don't know. I can't not think of it. Anyway, as for my final thoughts, I do have a couple things I want to mention. One is that I didn't get to mention this at the end of our review for Hobbs and Shaw, but we do have a review of Hobbs and Shaw, or I'm sorry, Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw up on our website, written by the great Kate Boyle. She liked the film, so if you want some positive thoughts, you can go read that. It was a great review write-up from Kate. She always does a great job.
That is a very good review. Love Kate. Thank you, Kate.
Sorry, Kate, I didn't get to mention you up top, but you get in the final thoughts, so that's always great, right? The next thing I want to mention is, it was somebody's birthday this week. Somebody's birthday. Not going to say whose birthday it was.
It's your birthday.
You know, it might have been Mr. J.D. Duran's. And I know, I listen to the main show.
El Prez himself, J.D. Duran.
Jay, I know you listen to the main show.
Absolutely.
And he says he doesn't like a big thing. But I just want to say, from the bottom of our hearts, from the Extra Film crew, we want to say happy birthday, J.D.
Absolutely. It looked like you had a great little birthday viewing party at your lovely home. So I'm very happy for you. And yeah, I cannot stress enough how much work he puts into everything that goes on in In-Session Film. So happy, happy, happiest of birthdays to JD.
Yeah. And JD, I echo everything Jay said. I mean, you put up with the two of us on a weekly basis, heck, on a daily basis sometimes, texting us and talking about the show and other.
That's honestly probably a negative in his.
Yeah, it's probably a negative. As a manager, it's a positive for us.
As a manager, yeah. You know. I mean, it's great for us, but what does it say of his CEO abilities? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, he's kept us around, and he's going to keep us around until, you know, he's tired of us, and maybe next birthday will be a totally different
story. I did see a review on iTunes by someone named Ryan M, who said that he actually prefers Extra Film to the main show.
Well, so it's always great to get...
Thank you, Ryan M, for that great review.
It's always great to get good feedback, right, Jay, about Extra Film?
Yeah, he seems like a really smart guy. Yeah. I don't know.
He might, you know what? He might do a podcast. You know, he might have a really good co-host.
I don't know. If he does have a podcast, his co-host is probably really handsome.
Yeah, he's probably like a real good
Beef patty.
Yeah, real beefcake. Like, probably looks like The Rock, you know, and he looks like Jason Statham. You know, they probably have better chemistry than them and Hobbs and Shaw, right?
At least we're more genuine.
Yeah, that's true. Right? Oh, wait. Not us. No, we're talking about the hypothetical people.
Hypothetically.
Anyway. But anyway, happy birthday, JD. And thanks for putting up with us. But there is one final thing I want to talk about, Jay. And it is something that not many people have probably seen and not people probably care about. Well, probably a lot of people care about. And you saw this before Hobbs and Shaw, probably next to your buddy
the best part of Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah. And you and your buddy there in the theater.
No, he actually came after this. He did not see.
He came after this. So you didn't get to see it. Did you tell him about it later?
Yes, got his phone number and texted him during the movie about it.
Well, that's good. At least he is well informed.
It's common film courtesy. Okay? Yeah. You don't talk about it. You text during the movie about it.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want to distract people.
Well, I mean, you got to tell him that there was the teaser for Tenet, which is the newest film from Christopher Nolan, starring John David Washington, our Pats himself, Mr. Batman. New Batman, Robert Pattinson,
and
Elizabeth Debicki, Michael Caine, Kenneth Branagh.
Oh, Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah, a bunch of other people probably I don't have the full cast list here. Jay, any thoughts on it? I know it's like typical Nolan. It's like 30 seconds, 40 seconds, and you just get it like kind of a taste and feel of it. But to me, man, looked once again like Nolan's doing something interesting here. He's making his own kind of spy thriller. I'm excited about this one.
I don't know. It felt important.
Yeah.
While it was on screen, it was weird. I don't know. It's, you know, you watch something like that, and I had a similar reaction to when I watched Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It just feels like something unique.
Yeah.
It feels important, and even it took me a second to realize exactly what it was, and then I remembered that John David Washington is in the movie, and it looks like he is the lead of the movie, which is pretty cool because he's super talented.
Yeah,
and I can't wait to see it. It gave absolutely nothing away. There's a bullet hole through a window. That's all we got.
Two.
Nolan doesn't like to give much away in his trailers, which is awesome, and then people still go see them anyway. He's one of our last guys. It's like him and Tarantino, who can get a ton of money to make whatever they want to make. And I'm really grateful for that. I think it's a really special thing when a Tarantino movie or a Christopher Nolan movie come out.
Yeah, I know you're not like the biggest fan of like his movies, right? Christopher Nolan.
No, I'm not like a Christopher Nolan. I would not call myself a Christopher Nolan guy.
Yeah.
I think he's made some really, really good movies, but it's just he's making movies on a large scale targeted at a more mature audience. And that's something that you can't help but appreciate.
Yeah, I mean, I like Christopher Nolan a lot. I don't think he's like the end all directors, right? He's one of those event filmmakers I talk about all the time where he gets to make a movie and be at his own rules. And this movie looks really cool. I mean, it kind of had that feel of like Dark Knight, to me a little bit, you know, and like just being like a thriller, kind of a crime thriller from him. It's supposed to be like basically, from my understanding, it's going to be like his own kind of espionage thriller. So maybe it's like a mix of like the crime elements of The Dark Knight and then like, you know, the kind of quasi spy high stuff of Inception.
Look, he's been trying to remake Heat for his entire career. I was dancing
around it and saying that he's been trying to make the best version of Michael Mann films because he's such a big Michael Mann fan. But
even though he shoots on digital.
Yeah.
Chris.
Yeah, you know.
Come on, give him some credit. Chris Nolan, the biggest proponent of film, his favorite director is Mann, although Heat was like pre-digital. So I don't know.
But no, it was exciting. And that cast, Jay. I mean, that cast, it's John David Washington. You know, R. Patz is so beloved. You know, he was great in Highlight this year.
By the indie crew and hated by people who saw Twilight, ironically.
I mean, they can get over that because he's a phenomenal actor. And then Elizabeth.
Go watch Good Time.
Then
Good
Elizabeth Debicki, you know, who was great in Widows last year.
She's so tall. So yeah, great. She's so tall.
You know what I mean? And so,
she's like my height. Yeah, she's so tall.
So, but I mean, the bad thing is that we're not going to see it until next year. And that's always the bad thing.
I didn't realize it wasn't coming out until July of next year.
Yeah. So. But you know what? I'm sure Extra Film's going to get that movie next year for sure.
That will definitely be an extra film movie.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm going to tell you what, believe it or not, a Christopher Nolan movie, it looks like there's going to be some elements of time in it.
Yeah, I mean,
which will be a first for him. Yeah, he really doesn't play with time much.
I think that's a new wrinkle for him, and I'm very proud of him for
really
that.
Really going out of his comfort zone there.
Really, really so. Anyway, that's going to do it for this week's Extra Film. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you guys next week.